Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Each week, we explore different aspects of the world of music, including album reviews and concert reviews and other stuff along those lines. But we also like to bring you This Week in Music History, which is what we are bringing to you today. And in this very Olympic time period, I wish I had the Olympic theme song in the background right now. That'd be pretty nice, because then I'd feel even more bombastic and whatnot. We do actually have one Winter Olympic story to bring you today, but we will get to that a little bit later. To help me out with this show, of course, I have my two co-hosts with me, Greg Harvey.
Hello, everyone.
And Jacob Grum.
I hide behind a smile and understanding eyes.
That is true. Your eyes are very understanding. Deep, deep understanding.
The windows to the soul.
Jake's soul, which is fairly black.
And deep.
And deep.
A comfort.
Like a cave.
And
you're very bad at macabre, Brian.
Well, what do you expect? I mean, you know, if I'm going to go into the macabre, then I'm real dark and gory, probably. So
it's gory, like something I would say if someone stole my corn on the cob. I'd be like, "Oh, macabre."
I can do it. I can go like Poe whenever I want. I choose not to.
What was the show about?
This is This Week in Music History. If you would like to help our crazy, stupid show that we apparently are getting into, go to our website at followthesoundpodcast.com and click on the Amazon banner. From there, you can go to Amazon, where it allows you to buy pretty much anything. So if you want the collective works of Edgar Allan Poe to really get yourself in a dark mood, you can get that.
Or maybe that Furby you've always wanted.
Yes. Or maybe if you want to go out and just purchase some other music or some movies or whatever it happens to be. You can buy practically anything on Amazon these days, and they'll deliver it to you very, very quickly, apparently. But anything that you buy, we get a little bit of money from every purchase that you make. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It's really, really easy. So please click on that banner on the right-hand side, or just type in followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. It is that simple. Also want to thank lineupmedia.fm for allowing us to do the show. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And on to the show now. So this week in music history, we are going February 12th through February 16th. Yes, that's right. And we have some very good little news stories, and we got a bunch of birthdays to get through as well, because that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get things started with February 12th.
Oh, and we've got a barn burner to start out with.
It's the longest story we have in the night.
It is.
And so let's get to it.
And probably the saddest. 1976, Sal Mineo is stabbed in the back and through the heart in a dark alley after... there you go. End the sentence. Stabbed in the back and through the heart in a dark alley.
That's sad.
We'll get into it.
Why, Sal?
But to understand why, we have to understand where Sal came from. After appearing in Rebel Without a Cause, opposite James Dean, Sal had a brief recording career. He released a dozen singles and three extended plays. His biggest hit was Start Moving in My Direction in 1957. Shortly after starring in Exodus, however, he was in the news, at least the 1950s equivalent of tabloids.
Mm.
They were a little bit classier, but not a whole lot. Now, one of his co-stars in Exodus was Jill Hallworth, and he met her in a nightclub. Didn't intend to meet her, just kind of ran into her, and she was there with her boyfriend, producer Aaron Spelling.
Oh.
Now, Aaron Spelling was in his mid-40s at the time, and Jill Hallworth was...
Yeah, it's amazing to me, like, how late in years Aaron Spelling went making shows.
Yes.
So,
yes. Jill Hallworth, however, was... Excuse me. Hayworth was 20, and Sal didn't like that. So he decided to punch Aaron right in the face and tell him that he was too old for her. Well, either way, Jill had to have been impressed for it because they became an item for about a minute, which in real time is like 5 years. After their breakup, rumors of Sal being a homosexual swirled around, and his career, like the lead roles dried up, and his like Hollywood career went down the tubes.
Yes.
But
it's like, because back in Hollywood, you could be gay, but as long as nobody knew about it, yes. or at least only the right people knew about it, you were fine. It's like, but if it got out to the public that you were possibly gay, your career was doomed.
However, Sal wasn't really gay. He was bi. And in 1972, he did an interview with a noteworthy author by the name of Booz. And that was reprinted in Booz's 1996 book called Hollywood Gays. Now, you have to understand, before you like criticize the title of it, it's not like a demeaning title. Like the 90s were a different time. So like the book Hollywood Gays was actually
a celebration?
Yes. It was really kind of a like in your face, hey, these are the people. And it had a lot of different interviews and excerpts from people in Hollywood who had been living openly who they were for 30 or 40 years and still had a career.
Yes.
Good. Good for them.
So anyway, he quoted Sal in that, talking about his 72. It basically, if you want to read the 72 interview, go get the book Hollywood Gays. There you go.
It
was thrown in the back of the book. And he talks about being bisexual and being misunderstood. Even now, there's a lot of people who kind of take Sal Mineo and raise him up as like a gay icon and try and say that that Jill Hayworth was his beard to try and stave off rumors for a few years. But it really wasn't true. They had a straight up relationship mm-hmm. together. Anyhow, by 1977, Sal had moved to San Francisco and was doing off-Broadway plays. And he was leaving a rehearsal for the play P.S. Your Cat is Dead when he was on his way home and he was stabbed in the back. In 1979, a pizza delivery man named Lionel Ray Williams was convicted and sentenced to 57 years for the murder of Sal Mineo and 10 separate counts of robbery.
Hmm.
Interesting footnote. Mr. Williams, the murderer of Sal Mineo, his defense counsel was actually Jess Bass's turn lawyer, Mort Herbert, who played for Louis Armstrong's All-Stars.
What the? What a weird connection.
Yeah, if you listen to some of the late Louis Anderson albums, or Louis Anderson.
Louis Armstrong?
Louis Armstrong albums, you'll hear future lawyer Mert Herbert and defender of the murderer of Sal Mineo.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, everyone needs defense counsel, so it's not like I'm not like calling Mort out here. Just very strange footnote to a really sad story.
Apparently, Jazz Bass was not paying the bills.
No. Yeah, Louis and Louis Armstrong Jazz, by the way. Anyhow.
Yeah, no, pretty darn cool. Let's go ahead and move on to 1981, a year before Jake and I were born. Riding the permanent wave of their previous album, Rush releases Moving Pictures.
Yeah.
Of course, Moving Pictures features Tom Sawyer, Limelight, and YYZ. It becomes the best-selling album in the Rush discography. The Cameraman Eye is the last 10-minute-long song Rush ever recorded in the studio.
Living in a fisheye lens, caught in a camera eye.
I think Limelight is the weakest song in Rush's entire discography.
Why? Because it's also like the one that gets the most radio play?
It's the least Rush. It sounds poppy, and I don't particularly like Getty's vocals on it.
I feel like just the fact that it's a Rush song, it's pretty good.
I could see his point, though. And I mean, it's it's definitely been overplayed as far as like the Rush stuff goes.
Yeah,
I'd say Tom Sawyer is kind of in the same boat, but Sawyer at least has like, I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to judge because I like their music no matter what. I can put it on and I can listen to it. Mm-hmm. Like, it nothing about it annoys me, which is a really good thing.
I don't hate the song. I don't really have anything against Limelight. I just don't think it's all that strong. And there's a lot of people that like to, what's the word I'm looking for? Lead into a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to play some Rush. And it's always Limelight. It's like, oh, God,
it usually is, yeah.
I really wanted to hear about the priest of the Temple of Syrinx, and instead, I have this?
Well, wrong year, wrong album from Rush, but a good one. Moving Pictures was a solid album.
I think after Ready Player One, though, comes out, I think Rush is going to get a little bit of a bump in some of their sales, because I think all of these other people are going to find out about Rush. So, because that's supposed to be a good movie, and I know they used Tom Sawyer in the trailer, so I know it's going to be in the song or in the album for the movie. So that'll be good.
Yeah. Sweet. And if there's anyone listening to this that's just about to type and try and correct us, they're like, Rush is a Canadian band. It should be pronounced YYZ. I will tell you the same thing I tell all my friends north of the border, and that is Z is a biker, not a consonant.
That always cracks me up. The Brits do that too. So, yeah.
Oh, well.
Okay. Well, moving from Rush on to something a little different, 1992 was the year. Richard D. James releases selected ambient works, 85 through 92, under the alias Apex Twin. It is James's first full-length album and is a step away from his previous dance-focused work containing lush ambient pads, soft acid-esque synth melodies, samples of conversations, and distant techno percussion. All things that I truly enjoy in my music. The album contains some tracks started when James was only 14 years old. That's cool. But
I dig it.
Yeah. Boy, an album full of ambient, dissonant, techno. No, thanks.
See, I kind of like that sometimes. Yeah. I kind of like listening to it sometimes.
In the 90s, it was cool. It was cool for its time, but...
Like, I definitely prefer that kind of stuff way more than the, you know, pounding, like, techno stuff.
Oh, but, well, yeah.
But
like,
that's just
industrial techno?
Yeah, and, I mean, the 90s, it became just really, really ridiculous.
I think, like, nowadays...
Even now, it still continues.
I think nowadays, distant techno percussion would be considered like house music.
I could see that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
I like it.
Thanks, Richard D. James.
Yeah, I really like Apex Twins, so yeah. Good on ya.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right, so moving on up, we go to the year 2000. Screamin' Jay Hawkins, who of course had the great hit, I Put a Spell on You, died at the age of 70. Coincidentally, I Put a Spell on You was also recorded on this day in 1956.
Wow. He died on the anniversary of one of his greatest hits being recorded.
I would assume it was his greatest hit.
For sure.
A Spell on You, Jake.
Yes.
How many other Screamin' Jay Hawkins songs?
Yes. The Cackle.
Because you're mine.
That was a pretty good impersonation.
Thanks.
You should. Before you got here, Brian, we were practicing our Screamin' Jay Hawkins cackles.
Oh God!
That guy was a straight up showman, man. I love him. I love him.
Ooh, boy.
But that's it. Screamin' Jay Hawkins. Of course. I mean, he's. I mean, an icon in the early blues and that kind of stuff. So. It was a sad day in music when he passed away.
Yes, it was.
But
we have birth.
With death, we have new life, and we got birthdays.
Yes, we have birthdays. 1949, Stanley Knight, the lead guitarist for Black Oak, Arkansas, is born where? In Arkansas.
Arkansas.
And with that, let's get a little bit of sample of Jim Dandy.
That's pretty good.
Oh, all right. So Black Oak Arkansas is probably the band that no one's heard of that I hate the most. And the reason I say that is because, like, look, all right, anyone who, if word gets back to Black Oak Arkansas, please let them know that at least one band member should be wearing a shirt.
Yeah,
like during your concert at some point.
Like good, well, good balance.
I assume the girl in there was wearing a shirt.
I mean, just someone. I don't care who. I don't care who.
You can have like that one guy who's like, oh, I'm the shirtless guy. But when the whole band is shirtless, you're just like, somebody.
All right. So Black Oak Arkansas is the shittiest person in the bar you're at put to music. I feel like Jim Dandy is the guy everyone wants to leave like theme song.
That's the guy who's ordering like nothing but whiskey shots. Everybody whiskey! Whiskey shots for everyone.
Here's the thing it kind of reminded me of. You know, I don't remember the name of the movie. But this guy goes to a bar to see this great blues player. And it's this dude sitting there and he's playing blues just by himself with acoustic guitar. And this girl's there and he talks to her and he's like, you know, hey, he's like, how's it going? And he's like, you know, what brings you here? And she goes, oh, I'm here to see the headliner, you know, and the band's called like Blues Face or something like that. And like when they get up, like after this old dude's playing all this really great music and stuff, and this band gets up, it's like three white dudes, like with their electric instruments and just start playing like really bad rock covers of like old blues songs. And, like, the girl just goes crazy, and she's like, Blues Face! That's what that band reminds me of.
Yeah, plot twist, it was Black Oak, Arkansas.
It was not. But, yeah, they strike me as that type of a band that's just like, hey, we can play these, you know, three chords. Let's put a band together.
Aw. Well, to give Black Oak, Arkansas credit, Jim Dandy was a pretty big hit. It was a pretty decent song. I remember it was in the movie Overboard. So, you know, Goldie Hawn. Wait,
Goldie Hawn. Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry. I was thinking of the Adam Sandler movie Going Overboard.
You're not thinking of the Out to Sea with Don Lemon?
And no.
Okay. Walter Matthau. Okay. Well, we got another birthday.
Yeah.
In 1970, Jim Cregan, known as the bassist for Bare Naked Ladies, is born in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. Leading towards a great Canadian band to rule the 90s.
They're still going strong, which they cracks are. Me up.
They actually, so Bare Naked Ladies, I think the sleeper on them is their harmonies. The fact that they're very good vocalists, and I think that gets downplayed a lot as far as their music goes. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you listen to them, it's not downplayed, but I don't think the average person thinks of them and thinks like, oh, wow, they have great vocal harmonies, but their arrangements are very good.
I think what's funny for me is that they started out as being a just sort of like a weird band. You know, like, oh, they've got some weird lyrics in their songs. And then they slowly transitioned into like a supreme nerd band.
I would have to agree with that. I think
is why then their song then got used for the Big Bang Theory open.
That's true. They did do that. Yeah. Of course, you know, they had that big hit. It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
And yeah.
They had If I Had $1 million, I'd buy you a green dress, but not a real green dress because that's cruel.
So, yeah, Bare Naked Ladies, they started out as one thing, and they've morphed into another thing, kind of like a more, I don't know, harmony-driven version of, like, They Might Be Giants, you know, with, like, nerd songs and, like, that kind of stuff. But at the same time, they are, like, the darlings of Canada.
Yes, exactly.
Like, they are worshipped in Canada.
We they're so, like, a side note. In America, but they are like headliners in Canada.
It's like
if you were in Winnipeg right now, oh my God. Bare Naked
like
Ladies.
Brian Adams, it's like, you know, number one. It's like, you know, right underneath Bare Naked Ladies.
Where's Celine fit into that?
Yeah, Celine Dion.
The greatest singer in the world. She's in Vegas, and that's where she belongs.
And now,
fair enough.
And now, the great Canadian concert featuring Bare Naked Ladies.
I want I want audio tapes of the meeting with their label where they're defending their name.
Right?
Because you know that got brought up at some point. Like, look, we got to change the name because Target and Walmart are not going to carry it.
Because it's stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Which it is. It's really,
it was the weirdest sort of disconnect for me.
Yeah.
Because, like, I never would have expected a band like that to be called the Bare Naked Ladies.
Exactly.
Unless it was spelled B-E-A-R.
Bear. And, like, yeah, that'd be funny, actually.
Just because that would have been funny. But since it's, like, literally just their name is Bare Naked Ladies, it's like, oh, okay. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, and then you hear their music.
And then you hear their music, and it's not even remotely.
It's kind of, like, light and, like, adult contemporary-esque. And...
Yes. It's like there's no mention of bears or naked ladies.
And you would just assume they'd be like heavy or something.
Exactly. Mm. I always thought that the name was sort of a disconnect from what they sounded like.
Well, it's a dumb joke that anyone who's ever been in a bar band is like, well, in the next band, I'm going to call Free Chicken and Beer, you know.
So yeah, yeah, all the right.
Posters. Yeah, whatever. That, we've said enough about Bare Naked Ladies.
That's
we
true.
Can move on.
Okay.
February 13th, 1970, Black Sabbath releases their self-titled debut album, which, not coincidentally, comes out on Friday the 13th.
Spooky!
To add to the mystique of the band's image, new manager Patrick Meehan asked the band to stop giving interviews, and the plan worked. Through word of mouth alone, the album sold 5,000 copies in its first week in the UK. However, the first single that came off that album, Evil Woman, kind of a stinker by Black Sabbath standards. It doesn't sound like a Black Sabbath song. It sounds like a kind of, you know, like average 70s rock song.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that one like sort of 70s disco, is it?
No.
No.
That's Evil Woman.
No.
No.
It's
Evil Woman.
Not to be confused with Ronnie James Dio's Rainbow or Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow's Dirty Women.
Oh.
Ooh. Dirty women, they don't mess around.
Well,
you got me driving. Sorry.
I think our next person is a dirty Diana. I don't know.
Go for it.
No, this one is Brian.
Of course it is.
This one's for Brian.
But he's sleeping on it, so you might as well
take
it from him.
Well, I mean, I was sorry. Things are popping off on my phone here.
That's fine.
No, let's see. 1988.
Take it away, Brian Shimona.
Michael Jackson buys a ranch in Santa Ynez, California, which becomes the Neverland Ranch.
Oh, Bubbles was so happy.
Years later, after he died, they went in there. They found a bunch of weird things.
Like life-size dolls? And, yeah.
The dolls.
Hey, you know, it's funny. Speaking of Neverland...
What's happened to Neverland, actually, since then?
I don't know. Is it open for tours?
I don't think so.
No. I mean, it's open for tours of llamas and... I don't know. I'm trying to just think of something really absurd.
Anyways, so
well, it's still owned by the estate of Michael Jackson, and yeah, it's 3,000 acres.
Well, it's got to be hard to find a buyer for a Ferris wheel in the middle of nowhere, California.
I don't know, but like you would just want the property. You just want it all as a whole for something, right?
Would you?
Oh,
yeah, I think so.
Interesting. So okay, here we go.
It could be its own theme park, right?
Says, following the death of Michael Jackson in 2009, the neglected Neverland Ranch fell into disrepair. Saddened by a return trip to her childhood home in 2010, Jackson's daughter Paris resolved to acquire and restore the property in early 2013. The amusement rides and animals were gone by then, replaced with a meditative Zen garden and a section decorated with Peter Pan, Michael Jackson's favorite fictional hero, which makes a whole lot of sense.
It does.
So they created a garden, and they essentially wanted to create an area though where like they could bring sick kids and stuff, and you know, like have them enjoy time out on this giant area,
kind of like a children's hospice type thing.
Yes. Mm. Says unfortunately, as of May 2016. It was being sold by Sotheby's International Realty, and they were asking $100 million for it. which includes the 12,598 square foot six bedroom home and the 4-acre lake with waterfall, pool house, 3 guest house, tennis court, a 5,500 square foot movie theater and stage, train station, railway tracks. Yeah.
Dude, again, who would want that?
That actually sounds kind of cool, though.
They're specifically looking for a buyer who doesn't plan to turn it into a museum for the singer. Due to lack of interest, the price had fallen to $67 million by February 2017. Property is still on the market in early 2018 at the same price with Coldwell Banker.
You know who should buy that?
So if you got $670 million to burn... You know where you can find a place.
I like the sick children portion of it. Like, honestly, in all seriousness, like, that would be kind of cool if, like, St. Jude's or something had that. Like, and you could turn it into, like, a care center / like, rehabilitation center or something. That would actually be kind of neat.
It should get bought and donated to the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, and it could be just the proving grounds for, like, kids who are like, I want to launch a rocket,
you know? Yeah.
Like, they'd have enough room to just go out in the middle of the friggin' Santa Cruz desert. And,
wow.
I want to ride a llama and to launch a rocket. Okay.
At the same time.
Yeah.
One last thing on Neverland Ranch is that, because we were talking Dave Chappelle earlier, and he had a hilarious joke. Did you hear this one? His theory on Neverland Ranch.
Okay.
He said, okay, a lot of people crack jokes about, you know, Michael Jackson being maybe like a pedophile or something like that. And he said, no, I think I figured it out because Michael Jackson never grew up. He said, how many times are you that kid that you go to your friend's house and he's like, ooh, check it out. I've got a car bed. Oh, check it out. My mom bought me a new bicycle. Hey, check it out. I just got the newest video game system. Well, he thinks that maybe Michael Jackson was really just that child inside who was like, hey, everybody, come on over to my house. I got what? A monkey? Hello. Also, I just got myself, check it out, my own train. Yeah. Like, he wasn't trying to get with the kids. He was just trying to impress the children.
Just trying to impress them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he was the cool kid because he had all this money. And he was.
I could agree with that, but I also think he was a pedophile, so...
Yes, that's
it's kind of hard not to. I get it. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Maybe he wasn't doing all that stuff. Maybe he just wanted some friends.
I think that this debate, this debate still raging. We're going to have to the saying has now changed. The colloquialism is now, I'm just playing Jackson advocate.
There you go.
To the birthdays.
To the birthdays.
1919, Tennessee Ernie Ford is born in Bristol, Tennessee.
Woo!
Who
is Tennessee Ernie Ford?
He sang 16 tons.
16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt.
St. Peter, don't you call me cause I can go.
Weirdly enough, my mom likes that song.
It's a great song.
And that's the only reason why I know about it. Because my mom likes that song.
It's only one. It's one of two number one Hot 100s, right? Number ones that I can think of that have an oboe in it.
Mm.
The other one being Acker Bilk's "Strangers by the Shore."
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, Tennessee Ernie Ford. That song, you never hear anyone else doing it. Probably because they can't hit that note.
Because
it's like a Minnie Riperton. Like you never hear somebody doing a Minnie Riperton song.
It was one of these kind of songs, though, for me, that was like, that I hear and I recognize it, but it's you know, 16 Tons, that one, and then like the Green Beret song,
yeah,
and then like a couple of those, like, it's these guys that just kind of randomly had hits in like different eras, but are weirdly like story-based. I don't know.
Who did Big John?
We've discussed this on the show, and I forgot who it is.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. If you know, please find us on
Big
Facebook
Ben
at the
John.
Follow the Sound group
Big
and tell us
John.
Tell us who wrote and recorded Big Bad John. And while you're at it, we can also do Leroy Brown and a couple of them other ones that are based on people. So find out.
Follow the Sound on Facebook for the Follow the Sound Facebook group, or you can find us on Twitter at iFollowTheSound.
Okay, our next birthday takes us to the year 1942. In the city of Washington, D.C., Peter Tork of the Monkees is born. Peter Halston Thorkelson. I can see why he changed his name. Thorkelson. Peter Thorkelson.
I disagree. I think he should have kept it. And this is why he should have kept it, right? Because how much better would the Monkees be if in like every episode, once per episode, somebody yelled from off camera, "Hey, Thorkelson, get your hands off of that! Thorkelson!"
You know, it probably actually is Torkelson.
Maybe.
Because it's like the British, like T-H-O-M.
Thorn.
Tom. Oh. Is Tom. T-H-O-M is still Tom. So
Torkelson?
By Tom York. But.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm just...
And then it makes sense if he was Torkelson, and then he was just like, screw it, I'm just going to name it Tork.
Peter
like,
Tork. That makes sense.
That's my stage name.
I think maybe I just read his last name
too. Is it
too,
bad,
literally?
Though, that my other thought was that, he's out in California trying to get into something, either music or whatever, and they're like, no. It's like, if you're going to be on the show, it's like, you need like a stage name, a stage, you know, persona. Like, well, what's wrong with my current name? It's like, well...
It's got too many syllables.
Makes you sound like a Jew. We're just going to change that. Mm-hmm. You can't be too Italian. You can't be too Jewish.
Or, you ready for this? Or, SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, already had a Peter Torkelson.
That is also possible. Which would be awesome.
Hey, there you go.
But yes, Peter Tork, though, my favorite monkey. Easily. Now, you might think that it was Mickey Dolenz because Mickey was the drummer. No, Peter, to me, was like the real musical genius in the group because he could play multiple instruments. He could sing as well. He could write, and he could be extremely goofy. But I also felt that he got a bad rap because in the entire show, he's played as this just dumb character the entire time, and he's actually really smart. So when people met him in real life, they're just like, oh, it's like... You're really smart, actually. And it's like, well, yeah. It's like, that's a character I played. I was pretending to be dumb. I'm not actually dumb. So
it's funny, too, because in other countries, when they, like, redub characters' voices, and, like, they will make characters even dumber because of the the redumbing. But the redubbing that they do, that, you know, if somebody just says a line like, you know, oh, I didn't know that. And then, like, the new voice actor is like, oh, I didn't know that. So.
Nice.
I'd like to see the German version of the Monkees where they, like, just a bunch of bumbling idiots. Anyways.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to our next birthday, which belongs to this voice. That, of course, belongs to the one and only Peter Gabriel.
Ooh, that song is dirty.
This is a great song.
You could have a freight train if you just lay down your tracks.
I do think it's funny, though, we were just talking about Neverland Ranch and he had his own train. It's like, and then it's like, you could have your own train if you just lay down your tracks.
At Neverland Ranch.
Michael Jackson did that.
Lay down some roots.
Oh, God.
So, here's the thing. I'm a big Peter Gabriel fan.
No, stop.
I am.
Stop. Just stop.
No.
No, look, you just put a terrible mental image in everyone's head.
I don't care.
I'm a big fan of I'm a big fan of Peter Gabriel.
All right.
He's trying to act like he didn't say it, like it never happened.
I know.
I don't, what did I say?
Yeah, I know. You're just too innocent to know, Brian. You're just too innocent to know.
If I said it, I don't know what I said.
Peter Gabriel.
I legitimately have no idea what I said that you guys are
referencing. All right, so that song is nothing but innuendo.
Yes.
And you just talked about Michael Jackson's train at Neverland Ranch.
Yes.
And we just got done talking about Michael Jackson being a pedophile.
Yes.
So now I have this like weird like Lolita scene in my head of Michael Jackson trying to seduce a child while this song is playing.
That sounds like a personal problem.
I had a different thought, and I'm not even going to share it.
Never mind then. Oh, you're terrible. Just leave me out there hanging. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
All right.
All
right. You want me to tell you? Okay. No.
We've gone off the rails now.
I just imagined. The mental image I got was Michael
if
Jackson.
If only we could steam our way away from these puns. These
look, Jake. Puns. I can see it in your eyes that you want to move on.
I do.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Let me get this sledgehammer out and we'll.
Anyways.
That was awful. Quit hammering me with your jokes, Brian.
Shut up or I will send you to Salisbury Hill.
Gosh, you guys.
1961.
How many more can we do?
Yeah, happy birthday, Peter Gabriel. He had some good music.
So, yes, Peter Gabriel, though, of course.
That was our time on this story.
No. Because Peter Gabriel, of course, wrote the great song In Your Eyes, which is one of my all-time favorite songs. All-time favorite songs.
And Genesis was a good band.
Genesis was good, and I enjoyed Genesis even after he left.
So from one great musician to a musician that is subpar, in my opinion, even though I'm a fan. What's up with that, huh? 1961, the frontman for the punk rock group Black Flag, Henry Rollins, is born Henry Garfield in Washington, D.C. Henry Rollins is kind of a punk rock legend. He's also kind of known for being like a tough, badass dude. And since his musical career, he also had the Henry Rollins Band, which was honestly a decent band. They had some good hits in the 90s. And he's also had his own TV show. Believe it or not, Henry Rollins has moved out of the punk rock and rock and roll realm and into history. He is a huge history buff.
Yes.
And the last time I saw Henry Rollins on TV, he was explaining to me the value of a vintage rare coin.
Mm.
So, very scholarly guy, believe it or not.
What I like about him is that he basically gave up music. And he explains it that he just one day was like, I can't write anymore. It's like, I've said everything that I've wanted to say in music. I'm done.
Yeah.
And then he started doing these like spoken word tours.
Mm-hmm.
And that's become like his thing now.
Yeah.
And what I really, really like is the fact that he refuses to be bullied in his delivery, in what he wants to do. Like, he talked about how he was booked to go play in Tel Aviv, and like all of these people sent him messages saying, how can you go to that country and blah, blah, blah. They, you know, just want to slaughter Palestinians, blah, blah, blah. And we're not getting political on the show. But he was like, screw it. He's like, my fans will come to see me. He's like, they aren't being political about this. I'm not being political about this. It's like, I'm going to where my fans are, and they happen to be there. That's where I'm going. It's like, screw you guys.
Yeah.
But if you ever get a chance, check out Henry Rollins explaining the story about how he went to North Korea. It is hilarious.
Nice. Well, I will say he was never really quite the singer to begin with.
No.
So spoken word works well for him.
The one song I remember of his is Liar.
That's what I was just going to say. Rollins
Band,
Liar.
Which is a spoken word like song.
I am a liar.
That's a great video either way.
Yeah. My favorite story of his is talking about hanging out with
I will never tell
a name just left my just went right out of my head from Motorhead, Lemmy Kilmister. And he would borrow like books from Lemmy. Like Lemmy be like, here's a book, take this. It's like, what? Wow, this is like, this is a first. Yeah, it's a real good one. Take it.
Read it. It's real. It's a real pitch.
Yeah, I want you to read this.
Well, that's Henry Rollins, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Now we got to move on to 1974.
Yes, we do. Possibly one of the most important days in music history.
Apparently.
February 13th, 1974. Robbie Williams is born in Stoke-on-Trent, England.
What a horrible name. Stoke-on-Trent. Just what a stupid name.
It, literally the only reason I put this in here.
I'm sorry. I wanted to say Stoke-on-Trent. If you are from Stoke-on-Trent, I'm sorry. But that's a dumb name. Mm-hmm. All right.
Stokesville would have been better.
Stokesville, Stokers. I mean, you could have done so many different things other than
Stokenshire.
And of course, Robbie Williams is famous because of.
Why is he famous again? Other than I've seen his face and I know what he looks like, and I'm just like, oh, that guy.
Well, he was in a boy band.
Yes.
Called Take That.
Yes.
And they were a boy band with an edge.
Of course they were, just like all the other boy bands with edges.
And then,
well, usually the other boy bands just had one dude with an edge.
Yeah,
just one guy with a knife.
Just one guy.
Yeah,
like, and then he was the bad boy.
That was a boy band. Was just one guy with a knife.
He was the bad boy that all the girls wanted to change.
Yeah, because when it came to New Kids on the Block, that's what everyone was saying. They're like, "Hey, watch out for Marky Mark's brother. He'll stab you."
That was Donnie. Donnie was the bad boy. Watch out Everybody for knows it.
He'll cut you.
And then he went on to play the great Sergeant Lipton in Band of Brothers.
Well, happy birthday, Robbie Williams.
Happy birthday, Robbie Williams. Take that.
Mm-hmm. And also.
And now it's time for Valentine's Day.
Yay! February 14th. Got in 1958. CBS anchorman Walter Cronkite tells viewers that the government of Iran has banned rock and roll for being unhealthy and anti-Islamic. The unhealthy claim is backed by Iranian doctors who warn of hip damage due to extreme gyrations.
Extreme gyrations!
Yes. And thus marking the steady downfall of Iran in culture.
Fake news. No, seriously though. I looked into this. And Walter Cronkite definitely reported on it.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea who their source was or where they got this information. So,
I don't know, but I have seen those pictures of, like, you know, here was Iran in 1962.
Yes.
It's like women are driving and, like, you know, wearing whatever they want. It's like, here's Iran now. And it's like,
it's actually
burkas.
That's actually quite true because Iran used to be very similar to America. Like, it used to be like a very, what we as Americans would consider a civilized place. It used to be. It really did. It's kind of crazy to think about.
And now there are places in the world where they kill women for wearing jeans.
Jeez. You know, it's funny, this unhealthy claim by the Iranian doctors who warn of hip damage.
Yes. That's the best.
Yeah.
Hip damage.
Well, it's just funny because that reminds me of, like, recently when the state of Oregon was trying to decide if people should be allowed to pump their own gas. And all these people were like, well, I can't pump my own gas. First off, it's a hazardous material. And second of all, you know, I've never done it before. And there's just this laundry list of all these dangerous reasons why people shouldn't pump their own gas. And meanwhile, the rest of the country is like, hey.
Minus New Jersey.
But it was just, it's funny because that reminds me of that where it's like, well, there's all these reasons why we shouldn't without realizing that, hey, maybe the rest of us are okay with it.
That's why I love New Jersey because everyone in New Jersey is really honest. They're like, why can't we pump our own gas? Well, because the unions are really strong.
Wow, well, see, that's legitimate, though.
That's why. It's like the labor unions for the guys that pump gas is just too strong to let that happen.
I know we sidetracked onto this, but my favorite excuse that I saw from the whole pumping their own gas out there was, has anyone done a study on the cumulative effects of inhaling gas fumes over one person's lifetime? To which then the next person who responded was, as opposed to the gas station attendants who are inhaling that every day, like, for several years. It's like,
yep.
You don't care about those people.
I just
host peons, how dare they?
It's just funny imagining people in the state of Oregon, like in a terrible like gasoline infomercial. Like, are you tired of pumping your own gas? And it's just, whoa, it's like spraying gas everywhere. Whoopsie doodle. Anyways, that's what I think about those Iranian doctors.
That was the best transition back. I can just imagine those Iranian doctors, though, after they've banned rock and roll, just be like, you just wait and see that Elvis, one of these days. His hips are going to be horrible.
He's going to throw out a hip.
He's gonna have the hips of a 60-year-old when he's 30.
And then who will be laughing?
So.
Well, from one outrageous story to a man who was always outrageous, 1986, Frank Zappa guest stars on the TV series Miami Vice in the episode Payback.
And she said, boom, boom, with a tear in her eye. Watch out where the Huskies go, don't you eat that yellow snow. Watch out where the Huskies go, don't you eat that yellow snow. Well, right about that time, people, a fur trapper who was strictly from commercial. Strictly commercial. Had the unmitigated audacity to jump up from behind my igloo. And he started in the whipping on my favorite baby seal with a lead-filled snowshoe.
All right.
Hey, hang on. I got a joke for you.
Okay.
Ready? Filled. A baby seal walked into a club.
Oh!
Just let this sink in. You're going to laugh at some point, Brian.
I'm laughing internally, but that's cruel.
Oh, no.
I think it's more,
no, I don't
it's
care.
More humane. The baby seal walked into himself.
You know me. It was a choice.
Look,
I'm not one of those people who gets, like, you know, easily offended about things. You know, but when everybody goes off on the baby seals up in Canada, it's like, I'm just like, oh, who cares?
He started whipping up my favorite baby seal.
They've been doing that for a very, very long time, and none of you all cared. It's like, and now all of a sudden you care because you've seen a picture on the internet of them killing seals. Oh, no.
With a lead.
It's not like they
snowshoe.
Use, like, the meat and the skin and all that kind of stuff for other stuff. Yeah.
I mean,
not like
the
they're keeping the population
is,
in check, which exploded due to the lack of predators that were around.
The problem
none
is...
None of that happens to that, matter. It's like, but I saw a picture of them killing a fluffy white animal on the internet.
The problem is that baby seals are the most adorable gosh darn animals on this gosh darn planet.
That is true.
And if they looked
if
like...
If you fold my dog's ears back, she looks like a seal.
Aw.
Yeah. You're right.
If baby seals looked like earthworms or snakes, I think people would probably be clubbing them.
Yeah, there's a.
If they had 6-inch long fangs and, you know, could kill a man.
The pointy teeth.
All right, Tim the Enchanter.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but there's a hunter who I follow his Twitter, and he calls them charismatic megafauna. That is true. It's like nobody gives a damn if like a species of earthworm go extinct. They're like, regardless of what impact it has. You know what? Screw it. Somebody asked me why we don't play more Frank Zappa, and the answer is he has 111 albums.
That's true.
And it's decision paralysis, and it's impossible to choose like any song from Frank Zappa. Like, it's impossible to do it.
Yeah.
We just decided to just go with that one.
Well, even just that song we played, it's like, it was one song that just suddenly became a different song, and then it'll become like a different song, and that's just one song.
Yeah.
So just think, you know, 100 and some times, I don't know, 10 or 12 songs an album, times 3 songs per song.
Yeah.
I can understand how one would get lost.
So yes, Frank Zappa showed up on Miami Vice. On the episode Payback. There you go. It's that simple. Moving on up to 1972, born on this day. He's not crazy. He's just a little unwell. Rob Thomas of Matchbox 20. Of course, he was born in West Germany.
Which is interesting.
Yes.
Which
now,
is
he's
no
not,
longer a country.
He's not, but he's not German. It was a military base. And of course, he later on goes on to start a band, Matchbox 20. That becomes quite famous, stretches out into a solo career, also lands a bunch of hits with that. Did that one super massive hit with Santana,
Smooth,
the greatest Grammy Award winning song of all time. No, I'm kidding. And actually, it's really funny. If you want to watch something great, go on YouTube and search for Smooth, the TV show. And it's Rob Thomas and Matchbox 20, like, doing a fake pilot for a crime drama.
Isn't it all just the lyrics to the song?
It's all the lyrics of just the song.
It's a hot one. Yeah, like 7 inches from the midday sun.
Yes. Like, it's a crime drama set in Miami, and it's him, like, just spouting off lines, and the rest of the band trying to figure out why in the world they're shooting the show. Good stuff. But yes, Rob Thomas, my wife is a massive fan of Rob Thomas. I've seen Rob Thomas a few times in concert now. He is an interesting dude. He does not take himself seriously, and he just goes out there and has a good time playing songs that people enjoy.
He's a good guy. He's got good music.
He seems to be exceptionally cool. The first time I ever tweeted at a celebrity, I tweeted at Rob Thomas, and he actually responded, and he got my wife to watch Star Wars, like, because she'd never seen Star Wars.
She refused to until Rob Thomas
told her
to. She
refused to watch Star Wars until Rob Thomas told her to do so. Called her crazy and said she must watch it. And so that's exactly what she did.
Now you know how to get things done around the house there, Brian.
Tweet at Rob Thomas to make her do stuff. That's just how it works. I'm going to cut this clip out and I'm going to send it to her just so she can actually listen to this bit. But I like Rob Thomas myself. I like Matchbox 20. And frankly, if anybody says that they don't, then I don't assume that they understand what good music is. So I just move on.
Oh, snap. All right. Well, we move on to our next day, February 15th. And you guys, you're familiar with the phrase groupies, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you aware of what groupies are?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're skanks. They sleep with the band.
That's from School of Rock.
That is from School of Rock. Thank you. Somebody else got it.
Yep. Well, with that being said, are you guys familiar where the term groupies came from?
No, but I believe you're going to tell us.
Well, in 1969, Rolling Stone's front cover features an article on groupies, introducing the new term to the popular lexicon.
So it had been used before, probably by bands.
Yeah, somebody put it out there.
And then somebody published it in Rolling Stone, and then it became an actual thing.
I remember the first time I ever used the word groupie. My cousin followed REO Speedwagon around the country. That was her favorite band.
Wow.
She followed them all across the country.
She followed the sound of the Speedwagon.
Yes. And I just made a comment to her. I mean, I was young, so I didn't really know what groupies meant. But I was like, oh, you're a total REO Speedwagon groupie. And she was like, you mean roadie? You mean roadie, right? You mean roadie? And I was like, sure. But in the back of my mind, I was like, no, you're a groupie.
No, because roadies are what transport all the equipment.
I know. It's like, I knew what I was talking about. She just couldn't believe that I called her a groupie.
Sorry, hang on. Roadies get checks. They don't buy tickets.
Yes. See?
Yeah. Okay. There you go. So nonetheless, I think she was a groupie. If you follow a band across the country that much,
fair enough.
maybe not by definition, but you know. Moving on.
Let's go on to the next day.
1995
news story.
Yeah, right. I've got one for you. It's from 1995, Los Angeles, California. The heavy metal radio station KNAC goes off the air. They were on station 105.5 FM. And they signed off at approximately 1:59 p.m., playing Metallica's Fade to Black, and they were immediately replaced by a Spanish radio station, KBUE. But, all right, so who cares, right? You're like, okay, great, a heavy metal station went off the air. Question to you guys is, if you're running a heavy metal station and you're going off the air, what do you play yourself off with?
Oh, snap.
Interesting.
If you're signing off,
yeah.
What's the last song you play? Specifically rock.
Hmm? Well, I mean, you're a metal station.
A metal station.
Yeah.
In the year 1995.
Exactly. So you can't be like, oh, Mastodon's last album they won a Grammy for.
Fade to Black, I mean, is actually kind of a clever choice.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Honestly,
Well, here, I'll take over while you think. 90. Don't listen to what
Well,
I
I've
say.
Got an answer, but okay. I would say a different Metallica song.
Okay.
But I don't know what year it came out, per se. I'm assuming it was by 95, but probably For Who the Bell Tolls, because I like that one. And okay. The way the song ends, it just keeps going the dun-dun, bum, dun-dun, dun-dun. And it just keeps doing that until it fades out. So that would be kind of cool.
Not bad. Not bad.
But I mean, I wish I could have came up with something that wasn't the band that was already mentioned.
See, that's a hard one for me to choose because I'm not well-versed in heavy metal.
Maybe like Iron Maiden or Black Sabbath?
Yeah.
What's the...
Ooh, what Sabbath song do you go out on? That's
what's the song heavy metal, though?
Electric Funeral.
It's like, one-way ticket to midnight, call it heavy metal. Which one was that? I don't remember who that band is. How am I blanking on that?
That is, Sammy Hagar.
Is it?
Heavy metal
noise. Yep, it is Sammy Hagar. Yep. Look at that. No wonder it was stuck in my head.
No, Sammy Hagar kicked ass, man. He had some good hits.
That's probably what I would go out on then.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's not exactly heavy metal, but it's good enough for me.
Not bad. No, I think if you're going to sign off on a heavy metal station, you have to do it in German. So I'm going with Manowar, Hörst aus Stahl. Wow. Heart of Steel.
Not Du Hast?
I don't know if I would.
Well, 95?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, okay, whatever. I feel like that might make people tune out prematurely.
Manowar makes people tune up here prematurely?
Well, I don't know. I guess if it's a metal station, then you know what you're getting into. But with that being said, I think that if people didn't realize they were signing off, it might be like, oh, I'll catch the next song. And then there wasn't a next song.
Well, the next song is
in Spanish.
Right. It's, you know, that Spanish polka music.
Yeah.
I don't even know what you call that genre.
It's like Fade to Black, heavy metal, blah, 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 and then all of a sudden, you know.
You're right. What is,
Mike Quando comes on.
Yeah, what was, what was.
Si me quando.
What was, Selena, you know, that type of music. Yeah. What's the name for that? I used to know it.
Tejano?
Tejano, that's it. That's what you meant, Jake.
I don't know why that was in the back of my head, but it was.
Good
so.
Job.
I've seen that Selena movie, like. 5 times. I know I'm weird, but I go back and I watch movies again just because I want to watch movies again. I watch movies multiple times anyway.
How dare you?
And so, yeah, but for some reason, like,
wrong.
I mean, I could be completely wrong in the genre of music, but I know that genre is still continuing on today, and the instrumentation hasn't really changed since the 90s anyway. So, you know.
Well,
what are you going to do?
You know, speaking of foreign music.
Yes.
We have a great fact.
Yes.
For this
and
next one.
This one is the one I teased very early on. This is our also touch of the Olympics, the Winter Olympics going on. But in 1998, fans of the Japanese rock act GLAY, that's with a G, not clay, so GLAY, caused the Tokyo area phone systems to completely break down as they try to reserve tickets for an upcoming concert. Chaos ensues at the Nagano Winter Olympics main press room as long-distance lines go completely down during the ski jump event.
Yeah, that's funny. You have the Winter Olympics in Japan going on, the phone system goes down, and it was because of something else.
Mm-hmm.
A rock band named,
in a different city
named GLAY
doing their thing. Now, of course, before the show, we looked up GLAY, and they are so pretty much like straightforward Japanese rock. It's hilarious. As Greg said, this sounds like the intro to every anime.
Yeah. I expected the subtitles while it was playing to be like, "Your heart in my hand, together we will prosper forward."
That's really what it sounded like. Yeah. I would have played a clip of Glay, but it's just I couldn't bring myself to do it.
You were gonna make me physically ill.
But most people have computers. So, they can.
I got no problem with you know me. I got no problem with foreign music. I love. There's a bunch of Japanese bands that I do love, but I don't get why this band was that popular.
I don't either, man. They are almond paste on vanilla ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the blandest thing in the world. Anyway.
Mmm, yum.
Actually, I was thinking that sounded pretty decent, almond.
I'm actually a big fan of vanilla ice cream.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of almond,
right.
So.
It's almond paste and vanilla ice cream sandwich on two Zesta crackers.
You know, I was going to say, you could have just gone with like a saltine cracker or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been fine. But then, of course, he might have been called a racist
low
for that.
Low-sodium saltine cracker.
Oh. Cracker!
Oh.
No. So, but yes, I just think that that's funny. Once again, though, we want to cheer on America as they're currently out there in Pyeongchang rocking out. And I know two of the gold medals that we currently have were from two youngins, both 17 years old, who were cracking me up because the one kid, Red Gerard?
Redson Gerard.
Yes. Of course, he wins.
Or Redford.
Because he slept in, lost his coat, and had to borrow his roommate's. And then after he wins, starts dropping F-bombs on national television. America.
Yeah. Well, and he's from Colorado.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And he's 5'1". He is 5'1".
Wow.
He was like the same height as the other two Canadians on the pedestal. They're like, wow. You've got gold and bronze and silver.
That's how he got so much air.
Cracked
he was just
me
a little
up,
guy.
Man. I like that little dude. So, yes, go America. We're rooting for you in whatever current event happens to be going on.
Yeah, I have.
But I've watched a crap ton of curling in the last couple of days. I can't help it. The game gets into my head. I love it.
I think we won. We won some curling too.
The
duo from Wisconsin.
No, it was a man and woman. No, we didn't win anything for that for mixed curling.
Damn it!
Because it was winners were Canada. Second place was I don't remember who that and third place was Russia.
Dag nabbit. Well, okay. Let's talk about some birthdays.
Yay!
Bomb, bomb, bomb. 1951, Melissa Manchester is born in the Bronx, New York. She studied at New York University with Paul Simon in her class. Later met Barry Manilow, who introduced her to the woman that would make her a harlot, Bette Midler. Do you know what Bette Midler's met?
I'm just going to play this right now.
Go ahead.
Play it underneath a little. Just go ahead and talk, Jake.
Oh, all right. So Bette Midler's backup singers were called the Harlots.
Yes.
Yeah. And later, Melissa went on to impersonate Yoko Ono on a National Lampoon album called National Lampoon's Radio Dinner. But in 1973, she released her first single.
Which is this what we're currently listening
right here,
to, Midnight Blue.
Things become rough. Haven't we had enough? And I think we can make it one more time if we try. One more time for all the old times. For all of the times you told me you need me.
That harlot.
For all the times you told me you need me. What good lines that speak to your soul.
Well, happy birthday, Melissa Manchester.
Yes, yes. Very good stuff there. I like that.
I personally love the version of this that she did on Burt Sugarman's Midnight Special.
Hmm. Not familiar.
Just because I like saying Burt Sugarman, that was an excuse.
Well, it's time.
For the last day.
The last day. February 16th, we kick it off with one of my favorite bands of all time and their lead singer. The year was 1990. The day before he turned 18, Billy Joe Armstrong drops out of high school A week later, he releases the first album with his band, Green Day. The album was 39 Smooth. And now, if you want to...
The rest is history.
Well, the rest is history. Have you heard of Green Day? I will say that album, 39 Smooth, was an EP. Nowadays, if you wanted to purchase it, they have it on CD form, and it's 39 Smoothed Out Slappy Hours, I believe is the title, because they took their four original EPs and they put them all together into one CD, a full-length CD.
Oh, okay.
And it's pretty good.
Now, the one that they became famous on, though, was Dookie, right?
Well, Dookie was, yeah, because they had Kerplunk before that, and that's where you first heard Welcome to Paradise.
Oh, okay.
Which was like their first single, but then they re-released Welcome to Paradise on Dookie, which was 1994. So,
yeah.
I love Green Day, one of my favorite bands. Billy Joe Armstrong's a good guy. Big influence for me. And he dropped out of high school, so I don't know what to think about that, because I do think you should stay in school, kids.
Get an education. Yeah. Unless you're an exceptionally talented punk guitarist.
I disagree.
Named Billy Joe Armstrong.
Drop out of school and lie on applications. You can't go wrong.
So, moving on up to 1998. This one cracked me up when I read it. At the Brit Awards, the drummer for Chumbawamba, Danbert Nobakan, dumps a bucket of ice water on UK Deputy Prime Minister John Prescott. Of his stunt, the musician says, "It's a metaphor for the underdog pissing on the steps of Downing Street."
Woo! Well, Chumbawamba was a very politically active band. So
yes.
This is that was
which makes a whole lot of nonsense to the American people that remember Chumbawamba's massive hit, "I Get Knocked Down."
Tub thumping.
Yes.
Wop, wop, wop. Thumping a tub.
So yes, Chumbawamba, one of those bands, it's like, oh, okay. It's like, it's this weird group that had that one hit that yeah. was pretty massive. But like, then you find out that they were highly political, and then you're like, wait, why?
You know what's weird about Chumbawamba is that for a long time, VH1 would run like sweepers. Like they had like the music, you know, like how you say like, oh, the Olympics, and you immediately think like, bum, 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 you know, the Olympic theme music.
Yes, that great music.
Well, VH1 for a while had their music, and it was totally a Chumbawamba song that they used for like all their transitions. That was the one that goes, bum, ba-da-da, ba-da. And I just couldn't believe that VH1's like signature song was a Chumbawamba B-side.
Nice.
From their Tub Thumping album.
So there you go. Chumbawamba drummer decided to throw a bucket of ice water on the UK Deputy Prime Minister John Prescott. Of course, years later, people would voluntarily dump ice water on their heads for the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, guys. That's all I got. Next.
Birthdays. We got a birthday. Woo. 1952, James Ingram is born in Akron, Ohio. You might remember him from his 1989 release. You make me feel like a natural man.
You made me flash back to... The Simpsons. It's like, hi, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such movies as Blood on the Highway. Hi, I'm James Ingram from Akron, Ohio. You may remember me from my hit song, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Man.
Yeah. So, like, boo? Like, boo? Don't take a natural woman and, like, just flop the gender and change no other of the lyrics. It's really atrocious. It's bad. It didn't chart.
Of course it did.
It didn't chart. Did chart in the UK.
Of course it did.
Yep.
The Brits
63.
Are weird. Made 63 in the Hot 100?
63.
Wow. That's still bad. But
it's bad. It's like
but the fact that it charted at all is pretty impressive.
It's a dance version.
Oh, nice.
Did he, like, get a good deal on the royalties or something? Like,
I have no idea what was going through.
I need a cover song, Mr. Manager. Find me a song to cover. Here, this one cost us, like, $5.
Yeah. Okay, so I had no idea who this guy was. I didn't know this existed until I read this. And then I looked into it, and he's like a backup singer or primary singer on pretty much every Tony Award winning album. Like on half of every album that's won a Tony in the last 30 years for original music, he was involved in some way.
Wow.
Whether he was like a session artist for demos or is on the actual recording. He's got a good voice.
Hmm.
He can't sing. Just guess what, man? A natural man was not Destiny's way of taking you to the top.
That wasn't the big break,
nope.
But you know,
you make me feel.
It's kind of interesting though that he tried his hand in his own music like that, but then he found his niche apparently doing the background vocals for big musical productions.
Yeah, I feel like if he came back and he could take another stab at it. if he sang the song like it was originally.
You know what? He should have just made a career out of changing the gender of songs.
I was born to be a coal miner's son.
Like nowadays
I'm a Barbie guy.
He comes out with a cover of Beyonce, All the Single Men.
Yeah.
All the Single Men.
All the Single Men.
All the Single Men.
All the Single Men. Now put your hands up.
Oh, God.
And
who run this mother? Men.
Dudes.
Dudes.
Who run this mother?
Dudes.
Fellas.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Well,
woke up in the middle of the night. My father says, boy, girl, you got to live your life right. I don't know. I don't even
but
know.
But, Daddy dear, I want to live in the sun because
these guys.
Because dudes just want to have fun.
Bros. It's bros.
Because bros just want to crack a cold one. And to end the show on that high note, we have one last occasion for you. The birthday in 1958 of Ice-T. Born Tracy, and I apologize if I get this wrong, but I do believe it is Tracy Morrow in Newark, New Jersey. He says he takes his name from a notorious pimp called Iceberg Slim. Here he is, Ice-T.
Fair warning, there is language.
Hustler, word, I pull the trigger long. Grip my teeth, spray to every nigga's gone. Got my block sewn on my dope spot. Last thing I sweat, so suck a punk cop. Move like a king when I roll hop. You try to flex, bang, another bang. Nigga drop. You gotta deal with this, cause in the way out.
Why?
Cash money ain't never gonna play out. I got nothing to lose, much to gain. In my brain, I got a capitalist migraine. I gotta get paid tonight. You motherfucking right, taking my grip. Check my bitch, keep my game tight. So many hoes on my jock, think I'm a movie star. 19, I got a $50,000 car.
There you go, Ice-T.
Not just a refreshing beverage.
Yes.
I think we would like to mention that he also has his hardcore band, Body Count.
Yes.
And he is the same guy from Law & Order.
And a bunch of other stuff, too. But yes, Law & Order is his longest running acting gig, and I always thought that was great. Because, of course, whenever his name pops up on screen, it says Ice-T.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So there you have it, folks.
Yep.
Another week
in
music
history.
In the books.
So, I like that. That was a good week.
That was a good week. We had a lot of really interesting stuff. We had a lot of good bands that we got to kind of banter about, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm happy.
I dig it. All right, folks. This has been another great episode of This Week in Music History on Follow the Sound. Of course, once again, if you want to help us out, go to our website at followthesoundpodcast.com and click on the Amazon banner, or just go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon in your URL. That's that little bar up at the top. Once again, want to thank lineupmedia.fm. Go to lineupmedia.fm and check out all the great programming that is currently there. You can find a range of topics that you could possibly want to listen to. And of course, there's sports, there's entertainment, there's some new stuff, there's regional things, there's
all sorts of random podcasts that you could possibly listen to. Please go check out anything at lineupmedia.fm. So, this has been Follow the Sound, of course. I have been your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me has been Greg Harvey.
Extreme Gyrations.
And Jacob Crumb.
I'm every man.
Remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
P.S. Your cat is dead.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.